I would say just do your research. And that goes a long way too, by the way. If you are going to apply for a job ever, you know, make sure that you research the actual tribe. Like, look up the history of education there, because it's easy for us to think of like things as being a really long time ago, but there are laws that are broken as early as like the 1990s and things that are still happening today.
Today, I am excited to share my conversation with Brittany Roberts with you. She and I are talking all about the different types of schools on a Native American reservation, as well as how you can become a teacher on a reservation and her experience as a non-Native teacher on a Native American reservation. This episode is so good, so I'm going to be quiet so we can jump into the intro. Hey, hey, welcome to the Culture Centered Classroom Podcast, a space for educators looking to step into their power by creating a classroom environment and lessons that affirm, welcome, and celebrate all their students through instruction. I'm your host, Jocelyn Hubbard, an educator, teacher coach, wife, mother to 5 children, and your partner on this journey of creating culture-centered classrooms. Let's jump into the episode.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the Culture Centered Classroom Podcast. I am very excited for today's guest episode because this guest has such a unique perspective. And I've talked on other episodes about missing voices and sharing stories. And she definitely has a passion for identifying missing voices and being an ally and understanding the nuances of culture. I've watched her present at a number of different conferences, and her sessions are always amazing and dynamic. So when I asked her to be on the podcast and she said yes, I can't lie, I was giddy. I was smiling from ear to ear. So let me formally introduce you to our guest for today. Her name is Brittany Roberts, and she has been in education for 9 years, actively teaching on a reservation for 5 of those years. And she, again, is super passionate about understanding the nuances of American history. It is super complicated, and that is one of the things that teachers don't always acknowledge or know about. But Brittany is working to change that. There are so many broken treaties and atrocities suffered by the indigenous people of North America. And these aren't just things that have happened in the past either. They are still present day. There are living documents and present events happening today. If you don't know much about Native American history, Indian country, or about reservations in general, these topics don't get much media coverage outside of Indian country. And again, Brittany is trying to change that. Before leaving the classroom in 2022, Brittany lived and taught on a reservation for 5 years. Now she's sharing what she's learned with other non-Native teachers. She's here to share practical tips to help you move from passive bystander to active ally as an educator. Without further ado, I'm going to bring Brittany onto this episode because you have got to hear her voice.
Hi, just thank you so much for having me. I told this to you before the episode, but I love your podcast. I love what you're doing, and I want more people to hear it. So I'm just glad to be a part of it.
Yay, I am excited as well. This is going to be a really good conversation. Now, I've already kind of jazzed you up in the intro and told a little bit about your story, but it's important that your voice is heard. It's important that we can all share our own stories. So what would you like to share about who you are, how you show up in this world, and why?
Big questions, good questions. So I will start at the beginning and just tell my story. I think that's really helpful. So I did not grow up with my parents in a traditional household. From a very young age, my mother and father were both into some things they shouldn't have been. And by happenstance, I ended up with my grandmother, which is ironically very, very common in Indian country. It's very, very common to have your grandfathers, grandmothers, aunties, uncles raising you and not be with your birth parents for a number of reasons. Really high rates of incarceration, drug and alcohol abuse, all this stuff. So while that could be a sob story, I'm honestly so grateful for that. Like, I love my grandmother. She was such a powerful woman. And I just feel really thankful that I got to be raised by her, because when we look at her story, which impacts mine, her father was from the Shawnee tribe, full-blooded Indian, as they would say. Her mother's white. And back then, when we have to go back in time and think like 1943, so in the 40s, that was not okay. Interracial marriage was illegal, and it was very taboo, and especially with someone from a reservation, because there was just really just unfortunate views of that. And so long story short, he went back to the reservation in Oklahoma, Her mother, because, you know, small towns, everybody talks, they had to move. So her mother brought her to California where things were a little more open there and built a new life for them. While that ended up being a beautiful thing, I think long term, my grandma also missed out. You know, she was able to pass as white because she was fair skinned enough, but she still had the brown hair. And like, if you look, you're like, oh, I can see it. You know, I can see it. But it's really sad because she missed out on that heritage, the culture that she would have grown up with. And so because she was always searching for it, because of that, she was missing it. She searched for it. So I grew up going to powwows. I grew up going to reservations, any kind of event or gathering they'd have, any kind of artisan craft fair. And you wouldn't know that by looking at me or talking to me because I was raised in Southern California. I have that Southern California accent. But I think it's an interesting look at culture because we just don't know by putting someone into one box what their upbringing is like. And you can have two students next to each other in a classroom who look the same, completely different lives. So fast forward, I grew up listening to flute music, going to powwows was very normal for me. I didn't realize, though, that wasn't normal because that was my culture. That's what I grew up with, right? I was like, doesn't everybody do this? No, they did not. Fast forward, my grandma passed away while I was working full-time in a job in Phoenix, and it wrecked me. She was both my parents, right? She was my mom and my dad. So when she passed away, I was just devastated. And I realized that I didn't want to live a life where I wasn't close to family anymore. Like, family was so important to me. So I was like, I really need to reconcile with my mom. I'm going to do that. And that's a whole story itself. So I reconciled with my mother, and she lived really close to a reservation. I said, you know, I really want to spend some time with her. We're not, you know, life is a gift. No minutes promised to us. I ended up moving close to her. And in the process of that, I was looking for jobs and teaching jobs. And she said, hey, there's actually a lot of teaching jobs open on the reservation. And so I went, what a beautiful thing. Like, I can still be close to my grandmother in a way in spirit. I could be physically closer to my mom. And it was something that was always interesting to me. And it kind of felt at home in a way, if that makes sense, even where I grew up. Like, if you look at the property lines, like, I live in a trailer park, super impoverished, freeway, reservation. I've always been in Indian country. It was just north. So I went there, ended up living and teaching there for 5 years. And it was not as easy as I thought it was going to be honest, because again, every culture is different, right? The Apache people are different than what I grew up with. So yeah, I've learned a lot. And I was even telling like Jocelyn before this, I don't think I'm an expert. I would not claim to be, but I know that what's out there is not working. And I think that you have to be willing to live a life of humility, especially if you're going to do this work, because it's just hard. And I think it's a lot easier to think we're doing the work than actually step into actually doing it every day. So fast forward to now, I have a blog and some other resources for teachers, not only who just want to live on the reservation, but if you're going to travel through one, you probably have crossed borders of one and not even realize it. These are sovereign nations, they're run completely differently. And even if you never go to one, this is still your shared history. As an American, as someone teaching what is now the United States, I think it's something that we all need to know more about. And that's why I'm here.
Brittany, all of it, yes. Let me just run back to what you said about how no two people, it doesn't matter what you look like. And sure, if I was just to see you strolling down the street, I definitely would not have assumed not even a single piece of those things. I mean, I'm just going to be honest. Maybe that you were a teacher because so many people are teachers, right? But all of that, that has created who you are. That is why I created this podcast, because we have to really understand that culture, that diversity, it is nuanced. It is beautiful. We all are culturally different. We all are diverse, and you cannot just assume and put anyone in a box. I love how you just shared your story, because none of us are experts, but I try to be an expert on using my voice, empowering myself to share what I have experienced with other people around me. So that is what we are going to do today. We are going to be experts, both of us, at sharing our voice, sharing what we have experienced. I love that you also brought in the element of passing for white. There is so much in the culture of Black America, Hispanic America, Indian America that goes back to our heritage countries and colonization with colorism. How many times do people of African American descent throughout history, how many times did they pass for white? Because .. And then, like you said, there's a whole other conversation. But all of these pieces that have created who you are, I mean, it's amazing and it's important. So thank you for sharing. I want to dive right in to this experience that you had teaching on the reservation. Like, let's just go back to the interview process. Was the interview process similar to what we would experience in a quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes here, if you can't see me on the podcast because you're listening to the audio, but what was that interview process like for you?
Yeah. And I'll also say, we can talk about that in a minute. There's actually different types of schools on reservations too. So depending on who runs a school, you're going to have a completely different experience there too. I will say they're often old school. And when I say old school, I mean, you are writing in your application. You are faxing it in. I know, who faxes anymore? You're going to fax it in. I had to write a handwritten 5-paragraph essay to show that I knew how to write without any kind of technology assisted, because a lot of schools on the res don't have consistent technology or even power. I can't tell you how many days we didn't have school because there was no electricity or no running water. I mean, all these things that you don't think of or you take for granted every day. Yeah. And then also lots of relational building. Like, a lot of my interview actually wasn't like a formal interview. It was her taking me around the school, walking around, just kind of talking with me. And that put me off a little bit. I should say, not put me off, but surprised me, because I think we expect this formal interview process. So we were walking, talking. I was kind of like talking to the kids as we walked around. And then we get back to the office. I thought, okay, we're going to do the interview now. And she was like, all right, well, sounds good. Like, if you want to get started. And I was like, oh, what? That was the interview? So that totally surprised me. But I guess it shouldn't have, because again, different culture, different priorities. She was really smart. She wanted me to see the school and could I handle it? Am I going to fit in? I've actually heard afterwards that they'll ask the kids, what'd you think of her? Because they think about that, like, when they're making offers. So honestly, I think it was maybe even a better way. And I know it's hard to say things are better, but it was different. And I think that if you can, they're going to offer, because, you know, they're trying to be accommodating. They're probably going to offer to do like a phone or a video interview. I say go in person anyway. One, it's going to set you apart because so many people don't even go, right? And two, for your sanity, if you ever do decide to apply and go, you need to see what you're getting yourself into. You need to see whatever, if there is poverty, I don't like to leap with that, but it's something that, you know, a lot of teachers aren't used to. So you need to see, are you okay with that? Yeah, it's definitely different, but I think that kind of set it up for how it was going to be there. So yeah.
I actually would continue to also argue that that sounds like a better way of interviewing, because the core of teaching, the heart of teaching, is relationship building. And if you can't do that, then what are you here for? So taking you around the school, and I know there's lots going on in the United States, in schools, we do have to think about school safety, but this is such a beautiful opportunity to not just see how you are interacting, how you're kind of like your, what are those things? Your nonverbals. That's what I want. How your nonverbal communication shows up as you're strolling around the school and you're engaging with the students and the other teachers, but to see how those students engage with you. I love that you had that opportunity. Leaning back to your bringing up the poverty. I mean, there are so many reasons why there is poverty on the reservations, because of systematically how Indigenous people have been impoverished. That's not how and where they started, of course, right? You were just talking about the complicated history. That's not where they started. They came from abundance and richness and joy and love, and they still have many of these pieces. But I do want to ask you, do you feel like, and I think you alluded to this a little bit, do you feel like living in a trailer park and near a reservation prepared you in a different way to teach on the reservation?
I think it did, even though, again, culture, every single culture is different, right? Like, there are some generalizations we make. Like, we talk about Indian country. If you take someone from the Shawnee Res and the Apache Res, there are some things they're going to relate to, because, like, yep, I've had that experience. Yep. There's going to be things that they both get, but obviously different people, different individuals, different cultures, different tribes. But I do think that it did to an extent, because poverty doesn't really bother me. I shouldn't say it doesn't bother me, but it doesn't bother me in the sense of, like, some people get really uncomfortable. If you haven't seen, like, people who don't have yards and they keep their dogs kind of wild walking around, like, that could maybe stress you out a little bit. If you just think about what an American home looks like, putting quotes in there, because obviously there's lots of American homes, but, you know, you have a dog in the yard, the dog has a fence, the dog is a member of the family. It's different. On the reservation, the dogs are communal. We all feed the community dog and the dogs hang out and they protect us, but it's just different. If you're not used to that, it can be hard, and it can be hard even if you are used to it. But I do think it prepared me a little bit. My grandma's mom was really wise, I think, moving her to California, where there wouldn't be as much stress. I grew up with a lot of people from the Torres Martinez tribe going to my school, so it wasn't a big deal. I grew up with a lot of migrant farmer workers who were living in Mexico, came and lived there part of the year. So again, I just thought everywhere is diverse, you know, that was my experience. Obviously not the case. So yeah, I would say it did, but I also think that I also brought in still a lot of things I was expecting or thinking things would go, because I think we all do that.
I agree with you. And I was asking that question because I was hoping that you would expand a little bit more on that. And you did. I tell people all the time, like, my black is not your black. I was raised up north, Midwest mostly, family on the East Coast. So when I moved down south to go teach, first of all, Southern culture is a whole other situation than living up north and in the Midwest. It just is. So I was contending with that and accents and then also trying to figure out my pieces as a teacher. So I love that you said that very specifically, right? You cannot think that, oh, we're talking about this one Native American tribe, and so now we're talking about all of them. No, please don't. Because if you were to sit down next to another teacher that
identifies in the same ways you do, racially or religiously or ethnically, you would still find that you are different and diverse from that person because, hey, you've been raised by different people who have different sets of values. Even if you subscribe to the same faith or religion, you might have been attending different churches, or maybe you were a Southern Baptist. This person was a Northern Baptist. All of these things, all of the many experiences, the nuances of your life and your day-to-day interactions make you unique and different and diverse from the next person.
And that has impacted the lenses that you have walking into any situation. Again, I guess I was really asking you that question because I think sometimes we assume that people are better prepared because of their story. And what I want to encourage anyone that's listening today is that you are prepared in the moment as you prepare yourself. If you are stepping into this space, and Brittany's going to talk a little bit more about this in a couple of minutes, but if you are stepping into this space with humility and with a heart to be an active ally and really and truly get to know your students, which should always be your posture, then guess what? This is for you. Like, you can be perfectly positioned to teach on the reservation as well and to help to add to the wealth and the richness that is around you. Well, any thoughts before I ask you the next question, Brittany?
Well, I was just about to write down, add to the richness. Like, that is the right mindset to have, because I think part of me, even though I came from poverty, I know what it's like. I came in thinking like, oh, I'm going to make such an impact. And I know that's hard for teachers to hear, because why do you become a teacher? We care about the mission. We care about the impact, but it can still be super ego focused. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to add to this place. Like, I'm bringing something that's not here. And maybe you are, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying that you aren't bringing something beautiful to what is already there, but adding to the beauty and the richness is how we should always approach it. Because no matter what someone's situation is, financially, racially, background, there is beauty and richness in there. And that's why I said, I don't like to lead with poverty, because then I'm painting this picture. Like, I mean, even just think about, like, let's talk about not reservations for a second. Let's talk about Africa. What do you think of when someone mentions Africa? You think of like, oh, people living in huts, which, by the way, Africa is a whole freaking continent. It's huge. There's a lot of diversity there too, right? But it's like, what do we think of? Because that's all we hear, like, in the media. And I think we have to kind of open our mind and think like, there's beauty in that. And even if people, a tribe, did live in huts, there's still beauty and richness in that too. Can you build your own house? I can't build my own house. So the fact that someone else can do it is freaking impressive. So anyway, yeah, go on, keep going.
Yeah, there is value in the way that other people choose to live their lives. I say this all the time, that you don't have to necessarily agree with it or choose to live your life this way, but you need to respect the way that someone else chooses to live their life, because they're choosing to respect the way that you live your life as well, I hope, right? Like, let's have some mutual respect for the way that we're doing things. And to your point about connotation. When we don't have an opportunity to read about different types of people, when we don't have an opportunity to actually engage with and build an authentic relationship with different types of people, then we lean towards stereotypes, whatever we see on social media. So many teachers refer to Africa as though it is a country when it is a whole continent. And I remember for myself, when I was in college, for the very first time, getting to meet people from different countries in Africa, because I knew a lot of people from Nigeria, but I didn't know anyone that was from Egypt. I didn't know anyone from Ethiopia and Eritrea. I didn't even know that Eritrea was a country, but I had a friend in college who was Eritrean. And I got to see, oh my goodness, how beautifully diverse and rich and nuanced the continent of Africa is, all of the different countries, all the different languages. And it's the very same thing for indigenous people that are in the United States, as it is so called, but the land that they have been living on historically, nuanced, diverse, beautiful. And how can you challenge yourself to step outside of your own expectations and your own norms and think about what they might be adding to you? So, oh goodness, see, Brittany, I start talking to you and I get all inspirational. Okay, I get all get all inspirational. But I do want to talk a little bit more about your journey teaching on the reservation. So you had the interview, you start teaching there. What did you start to learn and understand with the disclaimer that this is one particular tribe? And as you said, there are different types of schools. So maybe let's start there. Can you explain the different types of schools that are on the reservation?
Yeah, definitely. When we think of different kinds of schools, I mean in the way that they're run, like who governs them, and then also how they're funded, because that makes a huge difference. We're all probably pretty used to the fact that you probably work at a public school, likely. Maybe some of you work at private schools or charter schools, and even that's a hot topic, right? But when we think about different schools on the reservation, we typically have charter schools that are public, but they get a little more flexibility as far as what they teach. They may or may not do standardized testing depending on the funding they have. We have state-funded schools, so quote-unquote normal, what you're used to probably, most likely, if you work at a public school. They are run by the state, they are funded by the state, but they happen to be on reservation land, and usually they have some kind of like land licensing agreement with the state to be able to be there. Then you have private faith-based schools, so this is your Lutheran schools, your Catholic schools, which, ooh, there's a lot there too. Talk about colonization, there's a lot there. And then there are schools that we would say are BIE, so Bureau of Indian Education ran. So they're also reporting to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. These are completely federal governments. So it's like if something happens on the reservation, you may not know this, they might have a few cops, but it's actually a federal thing. Like if there's some kind of bad thing that happens, it goes to the FBI straight because there's not like a cop local governing body. It's kind of interesting, actually. So BIE schools are run completely differently. There are boarding schools. There are boarding schools that also have a day school component. So you have kids that go to a boarding school, but they go home at the end of the day, and they have a completely different curriculum and set of priorities. They may or may not also have state standardized testing, but a lot of times they're teaching the language. Sometimes they'll actually teach in the language. Actually, the school, Deshipiko, on the reservation I was at, very interesting. We would call that, I heard everybody call it deep res, because it was people actually speaking Apache in daily life versus you're closer to non-res. So even a 45-minute drive, you're in a completely different world speaking to culture there. So yeah, so those are the main types of schools. And I actually have, and I'll make sure that Jocelyn has this too, I have this what's called the res school teacher database, and it's always growing. We're adding to it to help you figure out, like, if you are going to teach on a reservation, or if you're just curious to learn, because this is good stuff to know, you can actually see, like, by the school, by the state, who runs it and how it's run and like what kind of school it is in case. So you, if you are applying, you can kind of narrow down your search. For you, it makes an impact because, you know, if you get practical like salaries and things, but it's also just good to know because that's going to affect the culture of the school as well.
That is very interesting. Something that I was completely unaware of. So thank you for sharing that. What came up for me, well, two questions. One, can you, and I, it's like a general you, teach at any of the schools? Or for some of these deep res schools, are they only run by and teachers that are part of that tribe?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So typically, see, this is why I say you have to do your research and see. It really depends by the school. But I will say if you work at a BIE school, it's a little bit harder. It can be harder because a lot of times they want the language fluency, understandably, right? Like that's a priority for them. And also a lot of schools and organizations that are on the reservation have what's called a Native American hiring preference. So you'll see this even if you go to ever work at a job for the tribe, like they will say on there, they do discriminate. And they say that like with pride, like we are going to hire Native American first. If it comes down to a Native and a white person, and then they're equally qualified, they're going to hire the Native, which they can do that. So yeah, so that's good for you to know. And then just again, this is just what you would do with any job, is just applying to more than one place. Like ideally, you're going to apply to more than one school. Although I say I had a unique situation because I knew right on the spot, like I ended up with the perfect situation from the get-go. But my situation is unique also because of who I was. So if you don't have any experience with this stuff, like none of that kind of cultural training in the beginning, I would say just do your research. And that goes a long way too, by the way. If you are going to apply for a job ever, you know, make sure that you research the actual tribe. Like look up the history of education there, because it's easy for us to think of like things as being a really long time ago, but there are laws that are broken as early as like the 1990s and things that are still happening today. So kind of went off on a tangent, but there's all different kinds of schools and the culture will vary a lot depending on which one you choose to apply to.
Let me just first say you're always welcome to go off on a tangent. I welcome tangents gladly, gratefully, whatever the phrase is. And I agree with you that it can seem many times like things happened so long ago. But when we actually start to do our research and we look at the dates, we realize, oh my gosh, that was 20 years ago. Oh my gosh, that was 10 years ago. So we have to understand, not just stepping in from this position of like, I'm going to have such a great impact. No, how about we rephrase that and say, what impact is this experience going to have on me? How is this going to shift yes. my thinking? How is this going to help me to be a better person in the world? Not just a better teacher, but how is this going to help me just to be a better, more informed person so that I can advocate for what is right in the places that I occupy? Another question that came up for me as you were talking about the different types of schools was, are there partnerships between schools on the reservation and outside of the reservation?
That's a really good question. And there are. I mean, I think the faith-based one is probably the most obvious one, like, you know, Catholic Church and stuff. They have things that they do. Lutheran Church does things too. But they're also for charter schools. There's a charter school that has teamed up with the Arizona Cardinals football team. And so they do like their nonprofit arm. They are basically a sports magnet school. If you didn't know about this, you probably do if you live in Arizona, but the schools on the reservations are known for producing amazing athletes. Like we're talking about like distance runners, basketball players. Basketball is a huge cultural thing. Basketball is a huge deal. They literally will shut down the district. If they make it to state, they won't have school. Everybody like on the res, everybody's carpooling. They're getting in buses and vans to go to these games. Like, they fill up stadiums in Phoenix. It's really cool, actually. It's really cool to watch. Which, by the way, isn't that beautiful? Wouldn't you love to know that your whole community is going to come up and show up for you if you go to a game? They drive, even if they don't have cars, they will find somebody's auntie, uncle, cousin to go with. So anyway, that's just super, super cool.
It is. And I love that element of the community. What things can we start to be incorporating to shift the narrative around the expectations and norms, the traditions in public schools, other charter schools off the reservations in the United States and, you know, worldwide? I know that there are people that are listening to this podcast in other countries around the world. So thank you for that, first of all. But to start to shift our thinking about how we are doing school and how we are involving the community. I taught in the South, as I said, but the first school where I taught down there was in a town called Red Springs, North Carolina. And the majority population in that town and of my students, they are members of the Lumbee Native American tribe. And so that was like a huge mindset shift for me, a huge cultural shift in understanding what my students were valuing, what some of their beliefs were, how they were choosing to show up in the world, and learning to not just respect that, because I feel like I respected who they were, but gaining a knowledge, like being knowledgeable and respecting those are two different things, right? Respecting someone, but also knowing them and respecting them. That's where you're going to see the greatest level of impact if you're hoping to have one. And then being able to converse with caregivers in that community and showing them that, no, like, I really do care about this. There was a story that you shared at a recent conference where you were talking about visiting one of your students at home and what you learned. Would you mind sharing that story?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, when you think about the interactions that a lot of Native Americans have with white people, they're usually not great. You know what I mean? Like, I've even had kids tell me, well, I don't really like white teachers, which, by the way, so cool they would come out and tell me that. Wow, thank you for being honest with me. I'm glad that we at least are in a good enough place to work from that. So when you think about the interactions they've had, a lot of times it's a white cop, it's a white lawyer because they're going to court off the res. I mean, usually that doesn't happen. But you know, if they go, it's like a person of authority, or it's someone who's a pastor who's saying, you can't do this, you can't do that. Like, when you think about that, it can be really, really limiting. They have a really negative view sometimes. And it's compounded by the fact that when we come in, even as teachers onto the reservation, we're coming in with what we think is valuable to know, what we think we should teach and how we should teach. So a lot of teachers, and this is something good for you to know if you ever want to teach there too, this is a mission thing. We're building relationships. And I don't just mean relationships in like you get along with the kids and you know that they like Pokemon. I mean, not just with the kids, I mean with their grandmas, their moms, their uncles, their aunties. You are making friends with them. And that is such a hard thing that I didn't learn really until like my third year in. So one of my students was struggling with learning, just disengaged. And this was just at the beginning of COVID, honestly. So you can imagine the reservation took this very seriously, history of disease and stuff coming over. But it just didn't sit well with me that we were just like, okay, we're on Zoom or not even Zoom, we're on Google Meet or whatever it was. And then we're just letting them fail. Like, no. That's just not okay. I had this kid not engaging with me at all. I made sure it was okay first because I knew a lot of people were scared, but obviously like his grandma, and honestly, I can't remember his grandma or auntie because they all say auntie to everybody. They just call everybody auntie. But I went over and said like, if it's okay, I want to go to your house. And I feel very lucky that I ended up sitting on the couch. It's very significant because when a cop comes over, they don't sit on the couch. They sit on the table that's like wooden because they're taught, don't sit on the couch, don't sit on any canvas because you're going to get lice. you're going to get like ticks and stuff. They live in there and all these diseases and things, which, by the way, like, crazy that we're still teaching that someone's house is dirtier. Like, that's a whole other thing. Anyway, so I went and sat on the couch. And again, I'm lucky because I didn't think about it. I just sat down because that was like the first, I just saw that and sat down with them and was talking to him and talking to her and just trying to figure out what was going on. And she was telling me like, well, internet's not that good. And like, you know, I've got to be working and I can't watch him while he's doing this. And even just from being there and just talking, maybe it took me 30 minutes or so. I left and I saw a lot more effort out of him. And it was never about me caring about him getting a higher score on a test or something. You know, like, it's cool if they have academic achievement, but it just wasn't okay with me that he had kind of given up. That was like, this isn't acceptable. We can't have this. So just me going over there and then sitting on the couch and realizing later that why that was so significant, because that's where family sits. That's not where the white visitors sit. I was in. And because of getting in, I was able to talk to him a little more. And because also I think the accountability of knowing, like, I know your auntie, grandma. So I know her. And so I got her on my phone now and I want to talk to her because we're not going to let you fail. And once kids know that you're not going to let them fail, they're willing to work harder because otherwise, like, why should they? In their mind, why should I care about this? So I can have a good job, so I can move off the res and be away from my family. Oh, that's a whole other thing. But yeah, so I think like you have to really connect with not just the kids, but their families, and also show the family that you care, that you're not just there to basically brainwash them, because that is what they will think.
Which, well, again, historically, that is what the schools that were set up by the colonizers were designed to do, right? Was to brainwash, whitewash, get rid of your language, your culture, anything that you hold on to dearly and you value, it's going to be not okay and we're going to get rid of it. So we can't even say that you're wrong for feeling this way, because history has shown us that this is what will be done if we don't intervene. But I love how, again, you are coming back to this idea of community. And I feel the very same way teaching in public schools. When I make an effort to truly get to know, not just so this kid can do better on a test, not just so this child knows that, well, I'm going to use this now as something over you. No, but I'm doing this because I care about you. And honestly, you can do whatever you want with your life, like whatever your path is going to be. I'm not dictating to you that you have to go to college or you have to go to the military. You have to do this one thing. What I'm focused on is you understanding who you want to be. Who, not what. Who do you want to become? Do you want to become a person who uses your words to empower and uplift and advocate? Or do you want to use your words to really isolate and bully and eject people? Is that who you want to be? So that's why I'm getting to know your people, is because I want to get to know you. And I think that that is something that's really missing in education in a lot of spaces, not everywhere. I work with some amazing teachers and they truly have a heart for getting to know their students beyond the test scores, beyond the data points, thinking about how restorative practices are rooted in the values, the beliefs, and the traditions of Indigenous people. Did you see that show up as you were teaching on the reservation?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we were talking about this at the conference. And actually, what's funny is like the Apache people will kind of make fun of this. They're like, man, you white people come up with names for all these things. And like, you try to like repackage the things that we've been doing for forever, you know? It's just like, it's part of the culture to make sure that everybody is heard. Because when we even just think about the culture typically found in Indian country, it's very collectivistic. It is totally the opposite of what we're used to, right? Like, think about the things that you hear from when you're a young age. Like, you're going to be successful. You can do anything you want. You can be anything you want to be. And I do believe those things are true, by the way, right? Like, that's part of how I was raised up too. But also, they think about the whole, like, how is this going to affect everybody? And you'll even hear like the grandma and grandpa say like, you're not special. And what they mean by that is not saying that they don't love their kid. They're just saying like, you don't get to go and, you know, and do something, whatever you want, because without affecting everybody else. Like, this is a group. We decide as a group. It's not just about you. And I think that is super important to bring into a classroom, both as the teacher. It's not about us either. You know what I mean? It's not just about us. And then also to teach the kid that, like, hey, what you just did there was not really respectful to the whole group and community. This is why. It's like, if someone cusses because they're frustrated, like even a kid, I address that very differently than if someone says F you to another kid. If someone says something to the kid, says something bad to another kid, I address that very differently, because that is disrespecting the other person. That's not making it a safe and welcoming learning environment for everybody. But if someone cusses out of frustration, that's different. If someone was cuss out of frustration, I address that very differently, because the first one is, am I reacting to it because I don't like it and because I feel like it's an offense to me as a teacher, as the authority? The second one is, now they're making it a stressful work environment for the whole group. And that's not okay. And, you know, we need to make sure that those kids can talk to each other, because we're all together till the end of the year, whether we like it or not. So it needs to be a functioning community, and we need to be able to work on things. Also, that's just life. Like no two people are going to get together, get along the whole time, right? You need to be able to say, hey, I didn't like it. You did that. Here's why. And someone to still say, even if they meant what they said, be like, oh, okay, I could have totally approached that in a different way. I could have used different words, like, you know, and just talk about it. So I think if you come from that angle, then you're all going to get along better. But it takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of practice to not be personally offended or upset because it's affecting you as a teacher, you know, because a lot of it is just the power struggle, especially when you're new to teaching, because you're still figuring out how to navigate all that.
Brittany, I think that is such a great distinction to identify the power struggle and to also think about, why am I offended here? Am I like personally offended because of my beliefs? So I was raised during a time when it was like, children should be seen and not heard. This is adult business. You don't even show your face over here. Whereas that's not the way that I raise my children, because yes, I mean, there are adult conversations. I'm not saying that they at 10 and 11 years old hear all the things, but there are some conversations that I do want them to hear because I need them to see how I'm navigating adulthood. So making that distinction and like checking yourself first. And as you said, as a new teacher, facts, 100%. I remember just trying to like get the lesson taught and manage the classroom. There was so much happening. And you want me to call these parents? One of the things, and I actually just recorded a solo episode that will air before mine and your episode airs. But if you're listening to this one, travel back and listen to this episode where I am talking a lot about restorative practices and trauma-informed and why it's challenging for us as educators to use some of these practices. It's because we have not been taught how to resolve conflict in a healthy way. We have not been taught how to build and sustain healthy relationships. That's not been a part of our formal education or our personal education. So I love that we are reaching into our history, looking at the culture and the people around us. And let's make sure that we're giving credit where credit is due. So not just saying, oh, look at this cool restorative practices workshop. No. Let's be very clear that this is rooted in and brought from the history and the culture of the different indigenous tribes around the United States. Maybe some other inspirations as well, but we want to give credit where credit is due. And think about how much different we would be as people, how much more prepared we would have been for just friendships. Oh, you haven't talked to your sister in 4 months. You and your mama ain't talking because you don't know how. And then we expect our students, let's sit down and let's chat for 5 minutes. And now everyone should be good. So you go to your corners and I don't want to hear about this anymore. Who resolves conflict like that? I certainly don't, but I love how, you know, you were really able to see firsthand how restorative practices really should be utilized in school and in life.
Yeah. And I just want to say that this is why I'm so hesitant to say expert. Okay. Because I see these things as practices. When you look at restorative practices, like you're practicing, you know, it's really hard to say that you're ever a master or an expert because this is interpersonal stuff. This is your own emotional regulation. That is not something that you learn overnight. It's something you keep practicing. And I think that if I could give like one piece of advice to help anyone come from like a passive bystander to like an active ally, because I mean, let's just think about 2020 for a second. Actually, let me go back. If you're a white person, okay, you probably didn't know how to respond. You're like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to look like I'm racist. But let's be real, right? That was probably part of it. I don't want to look like I'm racist. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to offend somebody. Should I go apologize to my Black friends? Should I go do this? Should I go that? And all this stuff, which, you know, we're just driving ourselves crazy. But I really think that's still passive because you're just thinking about it and you're thinking about yourself. How am I going to look? The sooner you get over yourself and how you look and that you just step out in action and like think, okay, what can I do right now? What can I do today to make this relationship good? Sometimes it's just saying sorry a lot. You know what I mean? Like it's like not saving face. It's just been like, oh, you know, I messed up there, man. Like, I'm really sorry. And I think it's good for kids to see adults do that. So like if I ever did lose my cool, and I did sometimes, like I think most teachers do at least once, right? Like you're upset. And you just tell a kid like, that was not professional of me. And that was not kind. So I'm really sorry that I responded in that way. I was like, I know you're still upset with me now. So you don't have to even forgive me if you don't want to, but I want to let you know that I'm sorry despite that. And I really hope that we can still be friends. I think it's good to model that because yeah, they can't We can't teach them what we don't have. And for us to be able to have that means we have to practice it every single day. And it is tiring and it is frustrating. And you don't want to look dumb. Who wants to look stupid? Nobody does. But you have to be willing to, again, that humility and to show up every single day. And I don't think that's just for teachers on the reservation. I think every single teacher should be doing that. Every single teacher, no matter if you're in a class, all white kids, no two white kids are the same. You know, it doesn't matter. You should be really thinking about how can I show up and actively be an ally for them? Because there's so many other things besides race too. Culture, and I know that you talk about this a lot, like culture is so much bigger than just race and just religion and just language. Those are components that are not the whole thing. So if you really want to be an ally and you're a white person or on the reservation, non-Native person, then I think you need to listen more than you talk and you need to be willing to say you're sorry and get over yourself. And yeah, that's kind of like my shtick, I guess.
So Brittany, I know that you shared a little bit before about this thing called active allyship, and I mentioned it earlier in the episode. I want to define what that is because I know that you've got some resources to support teachers on their active allyship journey. So what is active allyship?
So in a few words, it's just about showing up and being respectful every single day and seeing it as a practice, not just as a checkbox to mark off. So it's really a mindset shift. It's a paradigm shift in how we look at students. It's utilizing an assets-based approach by looking at other humans and also taking ourselves out of that, which is hard because we always have our culture wherever we go. But it's about taking action is really what it is at the end of the day, because there's so much out there. I mean, there's YouTube videos, there's podcasts that you can listen to, but that is not actually the work. That's the pre-work. The work is actually showing up and relating to people, falling on your face, saying I'm sorry, trying to be better, messing up again, and learning from that, taking the time to actually reflect on that. So that's what it really is action and reflection together. And I'm not saying that the learning shouldn't happen, because obviously that's what I'm sending you is like materials, but I can't actually be there when you show up and have those conversations that are really hard and uncomfortable. That is the part you kind of have to do on your own. Being an active ally is different than being a passive bystander. We can't just put up a post on Facebook and be like, all right, I'm good. I took some action. You know, that's not actually going to have the impact. Going to a PD and getting a certificate is not going to have the impact. The actual impact that you want is going to come from you stepping out of your comfort zone every single day and building those relationships with people. And it's really messy and uncomfortable. So that's what I would say active allyship is.
And I know that you have you've got your website that has several blog posts about your experience living on the reservation, things that you learned and things that you just wanted to share, things that you found really beautiful, but you also have your database. So if people are interested in teaching on a reservation, they can tap into that. They can connect with you, but you also have some resources for helping teachers understand active allyship. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah. And I'll say what we have going on right now. And I was even telling her before this, like, this is not how I like make money. Like my actual quote unquote day job right now, I'm doing like marketing stuff for people. This is not related to that. I'm really here. I'm here with Jocelyn because I believe in what she's doing. I think it's important. And I think that everyone needs to hear this, right? Because it's something that we should all be practicing, because it's just the way that we love and respect people well, no matter where you are. It's a mission thing for me. So I have a guide if you want some practical stuff of like, okay, but actually, how do I do that? Like, how do I keep myself from losing it when I'm offended? What do I actually do? I will make sure that Jocelyn gets a link to that for you, because it's just a good place to start, right? It's like, if you just need help with this, because it's also a sensitive thing. It's a scary thing to say that you need help with that. Like, who is going to go out and say like, oh, maybe I am bringing some biases in. Maybe am I racist? I don't know. So those are hard things to ask. And I get that. And so I'm going to send you some resources. I'll send you good books to read from people who are way more educated than I am on the topic. And, you know, I'll just basically forward you to them in that guide. And I also have a Facebook group where I share this stuff. So that's a good place too, because I also believe in this work that I'm doing, that it's not just about my experiences. I share that because I think you can learn from it, but we need to amplify other voices too. So I'll connect you to Native creators. I'll connect you to like other tribes and what they're doing in events. So I think it's good for you to know about those too. And then we also have in September, so I know a little bit off, but we have a reservation education summit coming up, and that's all online and it's free that weekend. So you can come in and learn from people who are doing this kind of work. And it's probably a little less polished than you're going to be used to, but I think that's good for you to see too, because a lot of times people who have really good things to say, they don't have the accolades. They don't have the educational background, but they have something for you when we kind of reassess like what we think of as far as value and education. I'm really excited for that. I think you're going to learn a lot. And I think that even if you don't want to teach on a reservation, you'll just be a better informed American human being, and you'll come away with a lot.
Which is definitely the goal. And I'll make sure that I link to that, because I want to attend and I want to see what is being shared. I'm constantly seeking out different opportunities to learn, to expand my understanding for my own cultural competence journey. I say all the time that I am a partner, right? I'm partnering with everyone that's listening, every guest that I have. This is a partnership because I have not arrived. I am learning and growing. And so I'm really excited about that opportunity to be able to learn more. And like you said, to continue to do mindset shifting on my own and reframing my thinking, because you cannot, you should not judge a book by its cover. You should not judge a person by their appearance, by the way that they initially start talking, because, well, I guess you can, but guess who's going to miss out? You. You are going to miss out on some amazing gems that they are probably going to drop from the lips of the language that you're not wanting to like hear or engage with because they haven't presented it the right way. They're not wearing the right outfit. Please miss me with all of that. Let's stop it. And let's make sure that we are listening more than we speak, as you said, and just continuing to check ourselves, right? Because being unsafe and being uncomfortable are two different things. And it's okay to get uncomfortable in order to increase our understanding of this world and to be able to engage with a different type of people, to be able to support our students. Obviously, I need to have another podcast episode where we talk more about active allyship because it's a whole thing. But I think that that's a great first introduction. And anyone that's been listening to this podcast for any amount of days understands that I am all about reflection, learning, and implementation. Like, you have to have all three. So I love that you just said that. And all of the teachers that are listening to the podcast that I coach, that I support, shout out to you. You know that we are actively working through those three steps. Please let everyone that is listening know where they can find you so they can get even more information about your story, how they can connect on a reservation, or more about active allyship.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm on Instagram over at Teach Blog Travel. If you look for that on Facebook, you'll find me there too, Teach Blog Travel, my group. I also have my website, teachblogtravel.com. I would say that's probably where I'm showing up the most because that's what this is, right? The learning, the pre-work. I don't want to say it's the easy part, but it kind of is. But that's what I can give you. And then the group is really good if you want to find out about Native creators, kind of, again, have your mindset challenge, listening to their perspective on education, on what it looks like to be a good teacher, on what it looks like to be an ally, because it's not just my perspective, right? Hear from them too. So the group's really good for that. And the website is good for learning. So if you are interested in becoming a teacher on a reservation, or if you're just interested in being a more respectful traveler when traveling through Native lands, or just better informed citizen about the history of our country, then the website would be a really good place for you to go, teachblogtravel.com.
Awesome. For everyone that is listening, please let me know your thoughts on this episode. I cannot wait to hear how you are stepping into active allyship in a much more real way. And I will talk to you again next week.
I want to thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. Please share this podcast with a friend. Then go rate this podcast on your favorite streaming platform. Apple, Google, Spotify, all the places, so that other educators know that this is the podcast for them.